This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We've got another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime for you, beginning with Rogues Gallery this week. We'll hear their November 29th, 1945 episode, Little Old Lady. After that, it's Inspector Thorne and the Dark Cigarette Murder Case, his story from August 31st, 1951.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
This chiseler's got you all fouled up in a murder, baby. You'll fry for it.
Senor Rogue, I don't know anything about a murder.
Tippy killed him. He killed Max. Conchita knows nothing about it.
Stop being chumps, will you? You're both in this with me. You help me frame Rogue for it. With Max and Khan, I'm the biggest operator in town. All we have to do is kill Rogue, and we got the world by the tail.
You'll all go to the chair for it. You can't get away with killing me.
I'm going to kill you, Rogue, right now. If you've got anything to say, say it, because here it comes, fall guy.
Rogue speaking. This afternoon, I found a little case in my crime gallery that brought back memories. You just heard a little of it. Enough to know that I was framed for murder. I call the story Little Old Lady, and I'll tell you all about it in just a minute. But first, here's Jim Doyle, who's going to tell you men how to get a fast, clean shave without having to scrape and slave.
You bet I am, Dick. Men, the simple, sure way to a comfortable shave is Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream. The instant you apply this grand cream to your face, the three important shaving ingredients contained in it go to work. They smooth down the flaky top layer of skin and soften up the beard. This makes it easy for your razor to cut whiskers close and clean without nicking or scraping. Among the important ingredients in Fitch's No Brush is a special skin conditioner. This conditioner gently lubricates your skin, protecting it from irritation and burning. After your shave, it gives your skin a cool, refreshed feeling that will linger for hours.
For those who prefer a lather cream, as Fitch's Brush Cream. It gives a swell, hurry-up lather that stays moist and washes off quickly and easily. It, too, contains the special skin conditioner for sensitive skin.
Ask for either Fitch's Brush or No Brush Shaving Cream. But for a solid comfort shave, be sure it's Fitch, spelled F-I-T-C-H.
Thank you, Jim. And now I'd like to go on with my story.
Okay, here's Dick Powell as Private Detective Richard Rogue in another personally conducted tour through Rogue's Gallery.
I was looking at the world through azure-colored glasses that afternoon. I was as low as a centipede's hangnail and just about as irritated. A couple of lush cases I'd been working on had blown up without paying off, and the girl I was madly in love with that week was madly in love with some other guy. I needed some money, I needed a vacation, and I needed a new love interest. When the door to my office opened and in walked a Latin-type panic who made my heart beat in a rumba rhythm that would have made Cougat sound like Spike Jones. I just sat there trading my blue thoughts in on a lot of purple ones, while she closed the door behind her and walked toward me.
You are Richard Rogue, the detective?
The celebrated detective, yes. What can I do for you?
I need your help, Senor Rogue.
Okay, what's your name?
Conchita Morales.
Oh, the singer, huh?
That's right. I'm in trouble, Senor Rogue.
You know, I sort of suspected that was why you came to see me. What's your difficulty?
Well, it's hard to explain, but there is a man in this town who is threatening me.
Well, that's not hard to explain. You're the sort of a girl who is liable to be threatened.
What do you mean by that, Senor Rogue?
Well, that you are beautiful and extremely desirable and, well, pardon me, Miss Morales. I shouldn't have said that. I'm just in a kind of an impolite mood today, I guess.
Then you don't really think I am beautiful or desirable?
Don't let that glassy look in my eyes fool you, Conchita. I can see, and what I see pleases me, if you go for understatements.
Then you will help me.
You know, beauty's a wonderful thing, Mexican type, but so is money. My time's for sale.
I have money. I will give you $250 if you will help me.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to get some letters back for me.
Oh? Why?
Because I write them when I'm very young and foolish to a man I think I love. I do not love him. I hate him. I want to marry someone else, that man I love, but I cannot because of these letters.
Oh, here, here. Slow it down to a gallop, Conchita. I'm getting a little confused. Who has the letters?
Frank Maxon is his name. He's no good. He is a... what you call a poor loser.
Uh-huh. And who is this man you love at the moment?
Tippi Tyler. We will be married soon.
Oh, you will be married soon. Well, in that case, let's make this strictly business. What do you want me to do?
I'm having dinner with Frank tonight at the Club Cooper. I want you to meet us there. I want you to tell him he must give me back my letters. If he knows that I have employed you to help me, he will give them up. He is without courage. Don't see how I ever think I was in love with him.
Frank is considered quite a ladies' man, or was, before you went up on that income tax rap a couple of years ago. Yeah, I understand the boys in his mob are giving him a little trouble since you got out. Where's that $250 you mentioned a while ago?
It is here. Just a moment.
That's a retainer. If the case gets tough, it's going to cost you plenty more, Conchita. You know that?
I do not care. I must have these letters. Here is $250.
Thank you. And now, what time do I meet you at the Club Cuba?
Be there at 9. And I'm warning you, Mr. Rogue. Come prepared for trouble.
Oh, hello, Senor Rogue. You are late.
Sorry, I was held up in traffic. Oh, hello, Frank.
Well, what are you doing here, Rogue?
Conchita invited me.
Sit down, please.
Thank you.
What is this, a surprise party on me, Conchita?
Mr. Rogue is working for me, Frank.
Yep. I came down to help Conchita recover some letters from you. How about it?
Nice of you to be interested, Rogue, but Conchita and I can take care of our own affairs without any outside assistance. Goodbye, Rogue.
No, I like it here. Where are the letters, Frank?
You bore me, Mr. Rogue. I wish you'd leave.
Make him give them to you, Richard Rogue.
I want those letters, Frank. You ever hear of blackmail?
I'm not blackmailing anybody. Those letters are mine. They came to me through the mail. If I want to keep them, I will.
But you're threatening me with them. That is illegal, isn't it, Mr. Rogue?
Sure. It's especially illegal for a guy who's out on parole.
Who's going to call the cops in on this deal? You, Conchita?
Mr. Rogue will handle it for
me. Look, sweetheart, it's no go. See? You and I'll just have to work this out our own way.
Hit him, Mr. Rogue. Kill him.
No, no, no. Now, there are ways of handling petty larceny pasties or pasties like Frank that you never heard of, Conchita. Look, Frank, you know you've got two strikes against you. Are you going to play ball with me?
Conchita's mine, and she's going to stay that way, Rogue. She's not getting away from me with your help or any other way. Well, I've asked you two or three times to get out of here, Rogue. Are you leaving?
No.
I'm sorry about this. I always liked you, Rogue. Oh, Smitty.
Yes, Mr. Maxon?
Will you ask the boys to throw Mr. Rogue out, please?
If your thugs lay a hand on me, I'll break your neck, Maxon.
We'll see. Throw him out, boys.
It occurred to me as I hit the sidewalk with the back of my head, among other things, that Frank owned a piece of the Club Cuba and that it was a bad place to start a beef with him. I got up piece by piece, counted my arms and legs, and waited a while for Conchita to come out. She didn't. So I felt in my pocket for that $250. It was there. I went home. The next morning, I went to the office and tried all forenoon to get in touch with my Latin-type client at her swank apartment hotel. The Mayflower couldn't locate her. I had a late lunch, and when I got back to the office about 3, there was a little old lady waiting there for me. A lovely little old lady, with rosy cheeks and twinkling eyes, with a lot of laugh crinkles in the corners of them.
Mr. Rogue?
That's right. You waiting to see me?
Oh, yes, I was. I've been waiting for quite a while, Mr. Rogue.
I just had to see you.
Oh, I'll have a chair. Don't tell me you're in trouble.
No. Oh, yes, Mr. Rogue, I am. I'm in trouble because my son is...
Oh? Tell me about it.
Well, there isn't really very much to tell, Mr. Rogue. I know so little about what Norman has been doing. He's always been a little wild, but a few weeks ago he quit his job. And he's had much more money than he ever had before. I know that he's been doing something wrong, Mr. Rogue.
Well, now, Mrs.
Mrs. Stamm.
Mrs. Stamm, have you tried talking with him? And
I haven't told you the worst yet, Mr. Rogue.
No?
Last night he came home for the first time in 10 days. Oh, I've just been worried to death about him. And when he came in last night, he was so pale. And I tried to talk with him, but he went right to his room.
Yeah?
He called me after a while, and I went in to see him. And, oh, Mr. Rogue, he had been shot through the shoulder. He was bleeding badly.
Oh, I see.
I asked him to let me call a doctor, and he wouldn't. I know that he'd been shot while he was breaking some law. I took care of him as well as I could, and I think he's going to be all right. I want you to come and talk with Norman tonight, Mr. Rogue.
Well, Mrs. Stamm, I'm working on another case right now.
Oh, if you'd just come out and talk with him, you could advise him what to do. He won't pay any attention to me, and I have to get him straightened out, Mr. Rogue. I have a little money, and...
Where do you live?
In the southwest part of town, at 2673 Spring Lane. Would you come out with me and talk with Norman? I'll pay you for your time, Mr. Rogue.
I'll go with you, Mrs. Stamm.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's perfect. All right, but please don't plan on me performing any miracles. If your son was shot during a robbery, he's going to have to go to jail. You know that, don't you?
Oh, yes, I know. I only want him to do what's right, Mr. Rogue. I don't want him to do anything foolish.
No, of course you don't. You have a car?
No,
well,
I...
we'll take mine. Come on. Well, you certainly have plenty of privacy out here, Mrs. Stamm.
Yes, it's lonesome. But my husband bought it many years ago. He thought then that it would build up out here, but it hasn't.
Did your son know you were coming in to see me?
Oh, no. I didn't tell him. He's right here in the front bedroom, Mr. Rogue. Oh, please try to understand Norman, Mr. Rogue. He's a very sensitive boy.
Oh, all right. I'll take it easy with him.
He's gone!
There was the bed with blood on the sheets where a man's shoulder would have been lying. There was no note. No sign of the wounded boy I'd made the trip to see. The little old lady was almost hysterical. I finally got her calmed down. She made some tea, offered me a cup.
I should never have gone away and left him. I should have known better. He was frightened, Mr. Rogue.
Now, drink your tea, Mrs. Stamm. Don't cry. Don't worry. I'll take care of everything for you. We'll find him.
You will help me, won't you, Mr. Rogue?
Oh, of course.
Please drink your tea. Don't you like it?
I love it, yes. It's, it is a little bitter.
It's a special kind. My oldest boy sent me from China.
Well, I'm feeling a little woozy.
You are? Well, that's right. That's the way it should be.
You poisoned me, you...
That's right, Mr. Rogue. I did.
My body dissolved before it hit the floor, and a warm breeze wafted me upwards, gently, like a spark out of a chimney. I was drowsy and happy when I hit cloud number 8. I was at peace with the world. Until I heard that nail file laugh of my alter Ugor.
Well, Rogie, Oh, shut up. Let me sleep, midget.
Don't you think you better get downstairs and see what's going on?
Why?
Oh, there must be some reason why Mrs. Stamm, if that's her name, gave you those knockout drops. Look at you, knocked out by Lavender and Old Mickey's. Bright boy.
Why do you suppose she did it, Pest?
Oh, I don't know, but you'd better find out. You're in a jam, Rogie.
Oh, I'll bet that Conchita dame fits in here someplace.
Get out of here, Rogie.
Okay. Don't push, Ugor. You're my friend.
Going down, going down. Next stop, planet Earth. Last car just leaving.
Cut it out. Well, look out. Oh. Oh, here I go again.
Goodbye, Rogie.
I came to in my car. My gun was gone. I looked for my money. It was still there. I looked at my watch. It was 9:30. I drove to my office, opened the door, and stopped dead in my tracks. There was a dead man lying there in the middle of the floor. He'd been shot at close range through the head. My gun was lying a foot from the body. The gun that had been stolen from me while I was knocked out. I closed the door and leaned up against the wall to think. I was still leaning there when the door opened.
Hello, Rogue. Who's your friend?
Oh, hello. Hello, Lieutenant Urban. What are you doing here?
I got a call telling me you just killed a man.
Yeah? Well, that's Frank Maxson, that defunct character there.
Your gun?
Yeah.
Looks to me like we're going to have to hold you, Rogue. For murder.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. But first, we'd like to remind you that in Marie Antoinette's time, hairdressers stood on ladders in order to dress towering hairstyles. Today, the trend in hair fashions is simplicity, a style that requires shining, immaculately clean hair. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo is ideal to keep your hair looking its loveliest at all times. Made from pure vegetable and coconut oils, it protects the hair from drying and becoming harsh no matter how often you shampoo it. Just a little Fitch's saponified shampoo makes swirls of cleansing, fragrant lather that whisk away every bit of dust and dirt. And the special patented rinsing agent contained in the shampoo ensures the removal of all lather and other particles from the hair, so you won't have to bother with additional after rinses. For a shampoo that assures praise-winning results every time, use Fitch's saponified shampoo. You can have a professional application at your beauty or barber shop, or ask for an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo. 6 full ounces, 50 cents. Now back to Rogue's Gallery. Dick Powell, as Richard Rogue, is telling our story.
What started out to be a very quiet day brought Conchita Morales, the Mexican singer, to my office. She wanted to get some letters back from a Frank Maxson. I went with her to meet Maxson in a cafe, and we had a brawl in front of plenty of witnesses. After I made a few threats, I got thrown out. Next morning, I tried to find Conchita and couldn't. That afternoon, a little old lady came to my office, told me her son Norman Stamm had been wounded in a holdup. And I went with her to her home. When we got there, her son was gone. I drank a cup of tea, which was sweetened with knockout drops, and, I woke up in my car, drove to my office, and walked in to find Maxson, the man I'd threatened, shot to death with my gun. While I was standing there wondering what to do next, Lieutenant Urban of Homicide walked in.
Looks like we're going to have to hold you, Rogue. For murder.
Oh, I didn't kill him.
You threatened him in a cafe last night. Plenty of people heard you.
Where do you get all your information?
The little bird that told me he was dead. That you'd killed him.
Oh, but I just got here. I've been gone since about 3:30 this afternoon.
Yeah? Maxson looks like he's been dead since about 7. Where were you at 7?
An old lady came in here this afternoon to see me, and I went out to her home with her.
You mean you've got an alibi?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? Either got one or you haven't.
Well, I went out to see this woman's son. He wasn't there when we got there.
So you came back here and killed Maxon. Look, Rogue, somebody phoned Maxon at 6 o'clock and told him to be here at your office at 7.
How do you know so much?
We've been on the case since 7:30, Rogie. Looks like you went a little too far this time.
Look, Urban, I was doped. I've been out of the picture since about 5:30. And while I was out, somebody lifted my gun.
Rogie, just put yourself in my place. I find a guy you threatened to kill dead in your office, shot with your gun.
Yeah.
Then instead of an alibi, you give me a fairy story about wicked old witches and knockout drops. Where does this old lady live, this one that kidnapped you?
Out southwest on Spring Lane. Let's go out there and talk to her, Urban. Okay?
Okay, Rogie. We'll just ride in the squad car, just in case, eh? No lights on. There's nobody home. Think we'll go in, Rogie. As long as you say there's a wounded man in here, I don't have to have a warrant. Try the door.
Oh, well, it's unlocked. Come on.
Turn on the lights.
Well, they don't go on. You got your flashlight?
Yeah. Look, Rogie. The furniture's all covered. There's nobody living in this house.
Urban, come over this way. Let's look in this bedroom.
Are you sure you're all right, Rogie?
Sure. Come on, over here.
Well,
there's not even any furniture in this room.
That's right.
But there was a bed with bloodstained sheets.
I'm sorry, Rogie. They seem to have disappeared with the old lady and your alibi. This house hasn't been lived in for months. Why'd you kill him, Rogie?
Look, Urban, you know me better than to think I'd pull a dumb rub out like that in my office.
Yeah, but there are no fingerprints on that gun but yours, Rogie. And he was killed in your office, and you don't have an alibi. What am I supposed to do? I'm a cop. I've got to believe the evidence.
Oh, sure, I can see it that way. Well, I've been framed by an expert.
Have any ideas?
Some vague ones.
Well, I'm gonna pull up here and get some cigars in that cigar store. If you're not here when I get back, I'll expect you at headquarters in an hour.
Thanks, Urban.
Good luck, Rogie.
Well, hello, Murphy. How's my favorite house detective?
Oh, hello, Rogue. What are you doing here at the Mayflower, huh?
I want to talk with one of your guests, Flatfoot. Do you owe me any favors?
Maybe. What do you want me to do?
Give me the pass key to Conchita Morales' apartment.
You want me walking the streets?
Ah, now, just give me the pass key. And if you hear any shooting, come up.
What's the deal, Rogue?
A little murder. Is she in, do you know?
Oh, Conchita isn't in. The old lady's up there, though.
The old lady? Look, Murphy, what old lady? I'm looking for an old lady.
Huh? Oh, you mean Conchita's mother. Yeah, she's...
Conchita's mother? Hey, a little old lady about this high? Eyes with lots of laughs in them?
Yeah.
White hair, plump? That Conchita's mother?
Sure it is. Her name's Shay. So's Conchita's.
Huh?
Her real name's Ellen Shay. Uh-huh. She's no Mexican dame.
No kidding. Hey, give me your rod and a pass key. No, don't get up. Please, Mrs. Shay. Just keep your seat.
Oh, Mr. Rogue.
Yeah, surprised to see me?
Yes, I am, a little.
I can understand that, Mrs. Shay. You figured me for a murder rap, didn't you?
Please don't point that gun at me.
For some reason or the other, Mrs. Shay, I don't trust you. Oh, where's Conchita, or whatever your daughter's name is, that Latin from Manhattan, that phony Mexican...
I won't have you talking that way about my daughter.
What do you expect me to call her? After the two of you framed me for murder.
Murder? You said that before. What do you mean?
Are you going to drop that act? Murder, I said. And murder's what you framed me for. Now, sit down. Where's Conchita?
I'm expecting her any moment.
Drop that gun, Rogue.
Oh, Tippy, where have you been? I've been waiting for you to come in. He keeps talking about a murder.
I said drop that gun, Rogue.
And why should I drop the gun?
Because if you don't, I'm going to pull the trigger on this one. And it's resting at the back of your neck. Come on, drop it.
Ah, well, where did you come from?
I was in the kitchen mixing myself a drink, fortunately.
Tippy Tyler, huh? I suppose you're the man Conchita's in love with at the moment.
That's right. They're going to be married, Mr. Rogue.
In the death house, I hope.
It's wishful thinking, Rogue.
The two of you killed Frank Maxson, didn't you?
Killed him? Killed Mr. Maxson?
No, Rogue. You did, according to the cops and all the evidence.
You were Frank's right-hand man before he went up, weren't you, Tippy?
Mm-hmm.
He kind of took over while he was gone.
Go on, talk, Rogue. I'm just figuring out what I'm going to do with you.
Oh, Conchita.
Hello, Mama.
What are you doing here, Senor Rogue?
He's making things difficult, Angel.
I just dropped in for a little chat about a house out on Spring Lane and a wounded man who wasn't there and a murdered man in my office. That's all. It was a very nice job of framing me, Conchita, Ellen Shea. And you can drop that broken-down accent.
Okay, Mr. Rogue, smart guy. What happened? Who was murdered?
Well, you ought to know. You helped to plan it.
I did not. I don't know what you're talking about.
I've been arranging things for us, Conchita. Frank Maxson is dead. Your mother helped arrange it.
I didn't know what I was doing, Conchita. Honest, I didn't know.
That's a lie, and you know it. You and your daughter are in this thing too far to get out now unless you smart up fast.
There's too much talk going on in here. Maxson's dead. He was found dead in Rogue's office, shot with Rogue's gun. Rogue's as good as burned for it.
Mama, did you kill him?
No, I didn't, Conchita.
Look, sweetheart, everybody heard Rogue threaten Maxson last night. It was our chance to get rid of him.
Conchita, listen to me. This Chisler's got you all fouled up in a murder, baby. You'll fry for it.
I don't know anything about a murder.
Tippy killed him. He killed Max. My Conchita knows nothing about it.
Stop being chumps, will you? You're both in this with me. You helped me frame Rogue for it. Max and Gunn, I'm the biggest operator in town. All we have to do is kill Rogue, and we've got the world by the tail.
You'll all go to the chair for it. You can't get away with killing me.
I'm going to kill you, Rogue, right now. If you've got anything to say, say it. Because here it comes, Fall Guy.
The little old lady picked up my gun and let Tippy have it right between the eyes. He never knew what hit him. The house dick came charging in, and she told him the whole story. Tippy owned that house she took me to. He framed it with the old lady to get me out of the way, giving her some cock and bull story about wanting to search my apartment. She pleaded guilty to giving me the knockout drops, but denied, knowing that he was framing me for murder. And as long as she saved my life and gave me an alibi for the time of the murder, I believed her. The judge let her off with a suspended sentence at my request. Conchita was very grateful to me. And when Conchita, she was grateful, oh, the angel, she sang. Oh, brother. This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Don't I meet some lovely people in these stories? They love murder like Richard Rogue loves money, and it makes a very happy combination. Ray Buffum wrote the story, Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. But don't forget, you've got a date with us all next Thursday night. We've got a story for you about blackmail, intrigue, and sudden death. We call it Eve and the Apple. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening, and good night, all. Now here's Jim Doyle.
Don't forget to tune in again next Thursday, same time. Oh, and by the way, be sure to see Dick Powell in his newest RKO picture, Cornered, at your local theater soon. And as I was saying, don't forget to tune in again next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. Removes dandruff the first time it is used. Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo is the only shampoo whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance companies. This statement can be made by no other shampoo. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilets good counter, barber, or beauty shop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
And now the National Broadcasting Company presents Inspector Thorne in The Dark Cigarette Murder Case. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company presents the exploits of the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of the Homicide Bureau, whose investigations rank with many of the most celebrated ones in the annals of crime fiction. An investigator smart enough to claim he is dumb and modest enough to believe it. Tonight, Inspector Thorne turns to the Dark Cigarette Murder Case. Shadows are beginning to fall as in the noisy, crowded heart of the city, we see a young man in his early 20s urging a girl down the back stairs from the Conroy Music School on the second floor of an old building. The young man is Don Galen, the well-known jazz clarinetist, and he takes the girl, Flora Withers, out of the back door and into a narrow alley beside the school, saying,
"Don't be so curious, Flora. I'll put you wise in a second."
"What is it all about, Don? I don't see why you have to drag me into the alley."
"Hush up, Flora, and get through this door."
"All right, Don, but I just..."
I guess we're safe here in the alley."
"Safe? What do you mean?"
"Listen, Flora. I've struck something hot in the music school. Something dangerous."
"Something dangerous, Don?"
"Terribly. I want your advice on what to do about it, Flora."
"Well, what is it?"
"Step away from the door a little. That's it. Now, you know that..."
"Don! Don, look out!" "No, not me. I don't know anything. I've got to run."
And now, a few minutes later, we see policemen holding back the crowds at each end of the alley, while a police sergeant stands guard over the body of the murdered man lying at the back door leading to the Conroy Music School. Suddenly, a quiet but authoritative man comes through the crowds, the fabulous Inspector Thorne of Homicide, and approaches the police sergeant, saying,
"You beat me to it, Sergeant Muggan."
"I was right on call, Inspector Thorne."
"What's the pitch?"
"This young guy caught some lead in his back, Chief. His name's Don Galen, according to stuff in his pocket."
"Don Galen, huh? Any witnesses?"
"No one. A cop on the beat heard shooting and ran over. Likewise, some citizens walking on the avenue. It was all over by that time."
"I see this door leads upstairs, Muggan."
"Yeah, Chief, it goes to the Conroy Music School. I've kept everyone in there."
"Good work. There might be a connection with the dead young man, Don Galen, and the school."
"That's what I figured."
"Conroy Music School, huh? Is that Lou Conroy, Muggan, the man who was once a big-time jazz musician?"
"Right the first crack, Chief. Conroy owns and runs a school, and is he putting up a holler?"
"A holler?"
"Conroy says we've got no right to hold him or anybody else in the school."
"That's so, Muggan. Let's go upstairs to the Conroy Music School. We're starting with Mr. Lou Conroy." "How do you do, Mr. Conroy? I'm Inspector Thorne. You've met Sergeant Muggan, I believe."
"He sure has."
"Sergeant Muggan has been taking some pretty high-handed measures around here, Inspector Thorne. Locking us up like a bunch of criminals."
"One of you might be a murderer, Mr. Conroy."
"Nobody's a murderer around here, Inspector Thorne. You're giving my music school a bad name."
"It'll have a worse name if you don't cooperate with the police."
"All right. What do you want of me?"
"Do you know the young man who was shot near the back door of your school?"
"I can't help where he was shot."
"Answer me. Do you know the murdered Don Galen?"
He was a teacher here at the Conroy Music School."
"So the dead man was a teacher here, and you object to talking to the police. I wonder why."
"Oh, now, look, Inspector Thorne, you're getting this wrong."
"Am I, Mr. Conroy?"
"Oh, I guess I got too riled up. But you see, I built this school on my own reputation, and it means a lot to me. I can't have people fouling it up."
"Especially the police, Mr. Conroy?"
"I'm telling you what I know."
"Go on. You say the murdered Don Galen was a teacher here."
"Yes, Inspector Thorne. Don was only about 25, but he had a hot name as a clarinet player. We put him on the staff for prestige. Come to think of it..."
"What, Mr. Conroy?"
"Just before the murder, I saw Don go out with one of the pupils here in the school."
"What pupil?"
"A would-be blues singer, Flora Withers. She was studying here. I noticed them because it seemed to me that Don Galen was sneaking out with Flora, sneaking down the back stairs.
They weren't sneaking.
Judy. Well, Inspector Thorne, Sergeant Muggin, this is my niece, Judy Smith.
Well, yes, I heard what you were saying, Uncle Lou, and it isn't so. I saw Don and Flora go out, and they weren't sneaking at all, Inspector Thorne.
Do you work here at your uncle's music school, Miss Smith?
Yes, Inspector Thorne, I do the secretarial work. And I was right in my office at the head of the back stairs when Don Galen and Flora Withers left.
You're a fool, Judy. Why don't you stay out of this?
Well, why should I, Uncle Lou?
Because Flora shot Don Galen.
Why do you say that, Mr. Conroy?
Yes, Uncle Lou. Why?
Well, if I must talk, because of you, Judy.
Because of me?
You stole Don away from Flora, didn't you?
That's a perfectly horrible thing to say.
But is it true, Judy?
It most certainly is not, Inspector Thorne. Why, Flora Withers and I were friends.
I've got eyes in my head, Judy. I saw Dawn making up to you.
But Flora didn't care, and even if she did, she'd never murder anybody, Uncle Lou. Why, she's a nice girl.
In that case, where is Flora Withers? She was due here for a lesson with me, and she hasn't turned up. It looks as if she's taking it on the lam.
You've got something there, Mr. Conroy. Sergeant Muggin, send out a call to pick up Flora Withers.
Got you, Chief.
Who else is in the school now, Mr. Conroy?
Only Bob Seymour, the business manager, and my wife, Evelyn. The dinner hour is always quiet, Inspector Thorne.
Where are Bob Seymour and your wife?
Oh, Bob Seymour was busy getting out some instruments that we rent and repair as a sideline. He's in the room at the end of the hall.
And your wife?
Oh, my wife, Evelyn, was waiting to go out to dinner with me. She's probably reading a magazine somewhere.
Well, Mr. Conroy, I think I'll have a talk with your business manager, Bob Seymour.
Bob Seymour couldn't have anything to do with this, Inspector Thorne.
I'm just a dumb cop, Conroy. But I can't help wondering why you don't want me to talk to anybody. Don't try to leave here until I give the word.
What a mess. And you're not helping Judy.
But Uncle Lou,
why do you have to protect Flora Withers? It's plain as day she did it.
Well, it's not plain to me.
Maybe you just want to think that, Judy, so you won't feel responsible. Now, listen to your Uncle Lou. Stay out of it.
Maybe I will and maybe I won't, Uncle Lou. But I won't believe that Flora killed Don until I see the proof.
Judy, come back. Judy!
And now, as Inspector Thorne enters the office of Bob Seymour, business manager of the Conroy Music School, we hear...
Bob Seymour, I'm Inspector Thorne of Homicide.
Oh, come in, Inspector Thorne.
Well, you've got quite a stock of musical instruments in this room.
They come and go, rent and repair stuff. A good service for musicians and a fairly profitable sideline for the school.
Mm-hmm. What did you know about the murdered clarinet player, Don Galen?
Well, he brought us a lot of business, Inspector Thorne.
You have a one-track mind, Mr. Seymour.
I suppose I do. But I hardly knew Don outside of business, except that one of the students had a crush on him.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. A pretty kid named Flora Withers, trying to be a blues singer.
Inspector Thorne.
Yes, Sergeant Muggin.
The alarm's out for Flora Withers. First step, she didn't go home.
You mean Flora Withers is missing?
That's right, Mr. Seymour.
So Flora Withers killed Don Galen?
Maybe, Mr. Seymour.
But if Flora's missing, she was jealous of a little secretary here, Judy Smith.
So I've heard. Now... Who's that?
That's Evelyn, Mrs. Conroy, playing that phonograph of hers again.
Funny time for Mrs. Conroy to be playing a record.
And a funny song to pick, Muggin. Frankie and Johnny, the torch song of the ages.
Evelyn Conroy used to be a popular torch singer before she lost her voice and her looks, Inspector Thorne. Now she spends a great deal of her time sitting around playing records.
You don't say. Did Mrs. Conroy have any dealings with the murdered Don Galen, Mr. Seymour?
Just that Mrs. Conroy is the one who suggested giving Don Galen a teaching job here at the school.
You mean it wasn't her husband's idea, even though he owns the school?
Well, Evelyn practically forced Conroy to employ Don Galen here at the school.
Why did Conroy object?
Oh, jealous, I guess, Inspector Thorne. Conroy was a big-timer once, likes to lead the band, not play second fiddle to a famous clarinet player like Don Galen.
So Evelyn Conroy sponsors Don Galen, and he's murdered, and now she's playing this particular record, Frankie and Johnny.
Holy hat, Chief. You don't think...
I'm not up on music, Muggin, but I remember one verse of that song that goes, Johnny saw Frankie a-comin'. Please now, Frankie, don't shoot.
But Frankie put her finger on the trigger and the gun went root toot toot. She shot her man because he done her wrong.
Golly, Inspector Thorne. Maybe Evelyn Conroy was in love with Don Galen. Maybe she killed him out of jealousy.
Let's go, Sergeant Muggin, and see if we can find out.
Okay, Chief.
It's coming from one of these small rooms down the hall.
Must be this one.
Yes. Yes, there's Evelyn Conroy at the phonograph. Mrs. Conroy.
Yes?
I'm Inspector Thorne of the police. This is Sergeant Muggin. We heard the record you were playing, Mrs. Conroy.
I was just amusing myself while waiting for my husband.
With the dead man on the doorstep?
Why not?
I may be wrong, but it seems an odd time to play a torch song.
That depends, Inspector Thorne. This particular one I'm playing is very appropriate. Seeing that Flora shot her man because he done her wrong.
Flora Withers, Mrs. Conroy?
Of course. Who else?
You yourself have been suggested, Mrs. Conroy.
Me? That's absurd.
Is it? Bob Seymour says you got Don Galen on the staff of the music school.
Well, suppose I did.
For what reason?
Now I see what you're driving at. I got Don Galen on the staff because he was an asset to the school, and for no other reason.
So you say.
There was nothing personal between me and Don Galen, Sergeant Muggin.
Listen, sister, between your kind and a guy, it's always personal.
I don't have to take such cracks. I'll bet Mr. Big Mouth Seymour didn't tell you that he had a fight with Don Galen.
You say Bob Seymour and the murdered man Don Galen had a fight?
I'll say they did, Inspector Thorne. Don accused Bob of holding out money, commissions on pupils that Don brought into the school.
The murdered man accused Bob Seymour of cheating him.
That's right.
Frankly, I'm puzzled, Mrs. Conroy. Your husband owns and runs this music school. Wouldn't he know about the money as well as Bob Seymour?
This was something between Bob and Don.
Really? Don Galen could have found out that both Bob and your husband were cheating him.
Get hep, Inspector Thorne. That would-be blues singer Flora Withers shot Don. It's obvious.
So everyone tells me. But maybe I'm too stupid to see it this fast.
Flora was nuts for Don, get it? And he was going for my niece, Judy.
That's so.
If Flora didn't kill Don, why would she take it on the lam?
How did you know Flora Withers is missing?
Why, my husband told me.
I wonder what else your husband told you, Mrs. Conroy.
What do you mean?
I wonder if he told you to put suspicion on Flora.
He did nothing of the kind.
Or was it your own idea? Come on, Sergeant Muggin.
Okay, Chief. What next?
I'm bothered, Muggin. It doesn't fit together. It's like a jigsaw puzzle with a piece missing.
If you ask me, there are too many pieces.
None of them right. Come on down the hall to the back stairs.
Okay, Chief. Listen, maybe we are looking for trouble. The fact is, the would-be blues singer Flora Withers went down those back stairs with the murdered Don Galen. And now Flora's missing.
Flora Withers looks guilty, Muggin, but what gets me is the way all these other people in the music school are reacting.
You think one of them did it?
Well, I don't know, but if the blues singer did it, why do the others act so suspicious?
Yeah.
And yet, they're not really suspicious. All I get is hints.
Take it easy, Chief.
I must be dumber than I thought, Muggin. If only I had... Muggin, there on the floor. Maybe that's the missing piece of the puzzle.
That cigarette butt?
This isn't just an ordinary cigarette, but take a look at that filler. It's unusually dark and ragged.
A reefer.
Yes, a reefer. That's what cigarettes filled with dope, marijuana, are commonly called.
What's a dope-filled cigarette doing in the hall of a music school?
Exactly, Muggin. What I want to know is, where and how does drug trading come into this? If it does, was it a crime of passion after all?
Inspector Thorne in The Dark Cigarette Murder Case will return in just a moment. But first, It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Tonight, hear another exciting adventure as Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, is called in to solve the baffling Rose Garden murder case. And here are a few more program notes. Sunday, be sure to hear the further adventures of gentleman detective Simon Templar, alias the Saint. Also on Sunday, there's screen actor Lloyd Nolan as hard-hitting Martin Kane, Private Eye. And then there's the new series featuring The Whisperer, an investigator who enters the underworld and solves many of the cases which have long confused the law enforcement authorities. Then hear adventure and international intrigue as James Monks comes to the NBC microphone as Mr. Moto. And here's a listening reminder about Thursday evenings. If you like radio drama that is different, stories you won't easily forget, hear Dimension X. Dimension X brings you stories of time and space and brought to you in future tense. Hear Dimension X next Thursday for something new in radio entertainment. Well, there you have it. A brief rundown of the programs you'll soon be hearing over this, your NBC station. Now, back to Inspector Thorne and the Dark Cigarette Murder Case. When the famous young clarinet player, Don Galen, is shot at the back entrance of the Conroy Music School where he taught, suspicion falls on the blues singer, Flora Withers, who has disappeared. Lou Conroy, head of the school, insists that Flora shot Don because he had thrown her over for Conroy's niece, Judy Smith. But Judy indignantly denies this. Inspector Thorne is baffled and dissatisfied as he meets Bob Seymour, the business manager of the school, who quarreled with the murdered musician over money. And then Evelyn Conroy, wife of the head of the school, who may have been in love with Don and jealous of Flora, the missing blues singer. And then the case takes a new twist for Inspector Thorne as he finds a marijuana-filled cigarette, a reefer, in the hallway of the music school. And we see him now at headquarters revealing an unusual plan to Sergeant Muggin.
Still no word about the missing blues singer, Flora Withers, Muggin?
Not a sign of it, Chief. She knows we're looking for her, too. It's been in every newspaper. She's got to be guilty or she'd turn up.
Maybe. But what about that reefer we found in the hallway of the Conroy Music School?
We're getting no place, Chief. The guards we put on to watch the school haven't been able to latch onto a thing either. Drugs or anything else. And the newspaper boys keep nagging me. This murdered clarinet player, Don Galen, had a lot of fans.
Muggin, I'm going to give you a story to tell the newspaper men.
Yeah?
You're going to tell them that the would-be blues singer, Flora Withers, has been found.
Oh, but Chief...
She's been found, Muggin. Or at least her body.
Her body?
Tell the reporters that the body of Flora Withers, the missing young blues singer, was found today in the river. A suicide.
Okay, if you say so.
Then, Muggin, I want you to go to all the people at the school. Conroy and his wife, the business manager, Bob Seymour, and Conroy's niece, Judy Smith.
Yeah?
Tell them that we're satisfied that the blues singer, Flora Withers, shot Don Galen and then committed suicide. Tell them that the case is closed.
Uh-huh.
Then, in public, call off the police guards at the school and replace them on the QT with a couple of our best plainclothes men. Got it?
Yeah, I got it.
Then get going.
Well, Inspector Thorne, the newspaper story you dreamed up appeared this morning and the guards at the school have been called off.
Good, Muggin.
What happens now, Chief?
We wait.
For what?
Maybe for this phone call, Muggin. Inspector Thorne speaking.
This is Bob Seymour, Inspector Thorne, the business manager at the Conroy Music School.
Yes, Mr. Seymour.
This newspaper story about the body of Flora Withers being found in the river, is it true, Inspector Thorne?
Why do you doubt it, Mr. Seymour?
It just doesn't seem like Flora, though I didn't know her well, of course.
Well, Mr. Seymour, the guards at the school have been called off, and you've been told the case is closed. Doesn't that answer your question?
Yes, I suppose so.
Goodbye, Mr. Seymour.
Goodbye, Inspector Thorne.
One party heard from Muggin. One party who wants to make sure that Flora is dead.
I don't see what...
Open the door, Sergeant Muggin. This may be the next party.
Okay, Chief.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Conroy, come right in.
We read the story in the papers, Inspector Thorne.
Yeah, about poor Flora being found in the river.
My wife and I wondered if we could be of any help.
In what way, Mr. Conroy?
Well, I've been rather bothered by the way I treated the police at first, Inspector, and I want to make up for it.
Yes?
I thought perhaps you needed someone to identify Flora's body.
Seeing she was all alone in the city, poor thing.
My wife and I will be glad to help, Inspector Thorne.
Well, that's very public-spirited of you both. Unusually so. But Flora Withers' body has been identified to our satisfaction.
It has.
So there's no need for you to see the body, Mr. and Mrs. Conroy.
Inspector Thorne, I wonder if... Well, Uncle Lou and Aunt Evelyn, what are you doing here?
I might ask you the same thing, Judy.
Just a moment. Sergeant Muggan, I'm expecting someone. Step outside and see that we're not interrupted here.
Right you are, Chief.
Now, what is it, Judy?
Well, I read about Flora killing herself.
Yes?
It's so awful to think of her in the morgue.
Now, Judy.
She was such a nice girl, Uncle Lou, and I feel kind of responsible. If she killed Don because he left her for me...
It wasn't your fault, Judy.
Fault or not, I just can't bear to think of her lying there alone. Inspector Thorne, I'd like to do what I can for Flora. May I...
May you what, Judy?
May I give her a decent funeral?
That's an excellent idea, Judy. It would be very good for the music school to show decent feeling.
That's right, Lou.
Inspector Thorne.
Yes, Muggan?
Your appointment is here, Chief.
Very well, Muggan. Mr. and Mrs. Conroy, Judy, you'll have to leave now. Go this way, please, out the private door.
But, Inspector Thorne,
what about Flora, the funeral?
I'll see what can be done, Judy. Goodbye. Well, Muggan, that story we planted in the newspapers about finding the body of Flora Withers is getting results.
But you don't know the half of it, Chief.
Oh, yes, I do, Muggan. Tell the missing blues singer, Flora Withers, to step in.
How did you know, Chief? Okay, Miss Withers.
Welcome, Miss Withers.
What's the idea of saying I'm dead and that I killed Don and threw myself in the river, Inspector Thorne?
What's the idea of hiding out, Miss Withers?
That's my business.
And it was my business to find you. I thought that story would do it.
What? You mean...
I mean it was a plant. Now talk.
Well, Inspector Thorne, I had to hide. I was afraid to come here.
Afraid of being arrested, Flora?
Oh, no, Sergeant Muggan. Afraid of being killed, like Don.
Yes?
Don took me down in that alley to tell me something, Inspector Thorne. He got as far as saying he'd found out something dangerous about the music school, and he was shot from the doorway.
Who shot him?
That's the trouble. I didn't see who it was. The door was only open a little.
So we still don't know who killed Don or what he was going to say.
No, Sergeant Muggan. But now I'm sure the school is a center for drug distribution.
Drugs?
And that Don Galen was killed because he found out.
How awful.
But who's in on it? And where's the proof we need? Miss Withers, you can help us get that proof.
Me, Inspector?
I warn you, it may be dangerous.
Don was my friend, Inspector Thorne. I'd like to get the person who killed him.
Very well. Now, listen.
And now, late that night at the Conroy Music School, we see Judy Smith, the young niece, going into the alley, through the back door, up the dimly lit staircase. She opens the door to the reception room and gasps.
Oh, Bob Seymour.
Judy.
Oh, you frightened me.
I don't feel so chipper myself. What on earth are you doing here, Judy?
It's very strange. I got a telegram.
I see.
What do you mean, Bob?
I got a telegram, too.
You didn't.
My telegram says, "Dead women tell tales. If you want to learn something to your interest... be at the Conroy Music School at 11 tonight."
Why, that's exactly what mine says.
What could it mean, Judy?
I don't know, but I... Oh, someone's coming.
Get back out of the light.
Oh, Uncle Lou, Aunt Evelyn.
Judy. Evelyn, it's Judy.
I can see Judy, Lou. And Bob Seymour, too.
What's going on?
Hold on, Conroy. Did you and your wife, Evelyn, get a telegram to be here at 11 o'clock tonight?
Why, yes, Bob.
Judy and I got telegrams, too.
No.
Hail, hail, the gang's all here.
Be quiet, Evelyn, this is serious.
You're telling me. I'm leaving.
Wait a minute, Evelyn, we've got to find out what this is all about.
You find out, Lou, and tell me.
Hold your horses, Evelyn.
We're all in this together.
Listen, Bob Seymour, I know when to clear out.
Look at the time.
Time, Judy?
It's 11 o'clock. That's the hour in the telegrams. I'm leaving right now.
Listen.
Hello, everybody.
Oh! It's Flora Withers, risen from the dead.
Good Lord.
Flora.
Don't you think I'm a healthy core?
Make her go away. Make her go away.
Oh, shut up, Evelyn Conroy. I'm no more dead than you are.
Oh.
I don't understand. The police have your body.
Not my body, Mr. Conroy. I found another girl who looked enough like me. I got rid of her. Dressed her in my clothes.
But why? What?
Okay, you're alive, Flora. What do you want?
You have nerve, Bob.
Quit stalling. You sent us those telegrams to meet you here.
That's right. I have a proposition to make.
A proposition?
Don Galen was killed because he found out something about the music school. He just had time to tell me what he learned before he was shot.
What could Don find out about the school?
I think you know, Mr. Conroy. And I intend to cash in on it.
What are you talking about?
I'll put it in plain English. Drugs are being distributed from the school. I have the proof. And I'm going to tell the cops unless you fork over $10,000.
No, it's not true.
The cops think I'm dead. That's just the way I planned it. And if you behave yourself, I'll just fade away like a good little corpse.
Flora, you're mad.
I told you I had the proof, Conroy. You ship the drugs inside the musical instruments you rent and repair.
No.
Some of the jobs are on the level, but others are phony. Blinds for shipping dope all over the country to people pretending to be musicians.
It's a lie, a crazy lie. I'm calling the police.
I wouldn't do that, Conroy.
The girl's crazy, Bob.
I said, don't call the police.
Bob, put down that gun.
Get over in that corner, Conroy, with Flora. You too, Mrs. Conroy.
Bob!
You see, Flora Withers is right.
You can't
mean... Yes, Mr. and Mrs. Conroy, drugs are being distributed from the school. They're being distributed by me and your niece, Judy.
No!
Yes, yes, me, Uncle Lou, your innocent little girl. Oh, you and Aunt Evelyn are so stupid a child could fool you.
That's enough, Judy. They've got a job to finish.
What are you going to do?
Unfortunately, you know too much, Conroy, and so does your wife, Evelyn, and Miss Flora Withers.
He's going to kill us.
You're right, Evelyn.
Oh.
Judy, go ahead of us. I'm taking them down the stairs into the alley. You go first, and when the coast is clear, knock on the door once.
All right, Bob.
Get moving, you three, and no funny stuff, or I'll pull this trigger.
Drop that gun, Bob Seymour.
Inspector Thorne! I'm hit! Judy, run for it!
I've got Judy, Chief.
And I have Bob Seymour, Sergeant Muggin. All the rest of you all right?
Yes, Inspector Thorne.
You rat, Thorne, you got me in the arm.
That's not all you're going to get, Bob Seymour. You and the Conroy's niece, Judy, peddled drugs and killed Don Galen because he got wise.
You got no proof. We deny everything.
Don't be ridiculous. The state witness is Flora Withers, the blues singer.
Flora?
Yes, Seymour. Flora died and was resurrected by arrangement with the police. She sent those telegrams by arrangement with the police and knew about the shipments of drugs and the musical instruments because the police intercepted the trumpets you sent out today, believing that the case was closed.
I told you to be careful, Bob.
Shut up, Judy.
You'd better, Judy. I got the whole drug idea when I found the butt of your dope-filled cigarette in the hall. You
what?
Smoked it for courage when the time came for the murder. It had your color lipstick on the tip. Take them away, Muggin.
And so ends the Doc Cigarette murder case. The part of Inspector Thorne is played by Carl Weber. Direction by Edward Slattery. The script was written by Bill Belgard, based on the original story by Frank and Ann Hummert. This is Fred Collins speaking, and reminding you that next week, Inspector Thorne in the Nickels and Dimes murder case will be heard next Thursday evening. Consult your local paper for time of broadcast. Stay tuned for Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Rogues Gallery, Inspector Thorne, past episodes of Case Closed, all the other shows and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there, and if you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can donate through the website as well. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts if you're interested, though any amount is always appreciated. Thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.